Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler, joined by Boom62 on the site formerly known as Twitter, and that is Mr. Jason Anthony, recording on Thursday, February 27th. You might be listening to this as we begin March, but here we are to talk outfielders and spring training stuff. Jay, what's going on today, man?
What up, Vlad? Happy end of February. One day closer to baseball season. It's getting exciting, my man. You know, you get in this point in the prep and everything kind of starts to stagnate and you're waiting on news, but you got to keep the grind on, keep going, keep finding information, keep finding little advantages. So, you know, this is where the hard work pays off.
Yes, indeed. And the news is coming fast and quickly, and keeping up with box scores, of course, it's not all that matters, but we want to see activity. We want to see how these guys are doing. Interesting notes on velocity increases, where guys might be hitting in the lineup. We're going to cover all of that today. And yeah, I mean, we are a little over 2 weeks away from the Cubs and Dodgers in Japan. And then the season, and we got our Vegas, of course, our Vegas drafts, which will be exciting. Got a little FTN happy hour that I will provide more information on in our Discord channels and possibly on X as well. But first, before we jump into the spring training news and everything, I wanted to let everyone know, if you don't already, because I've been shouting it from the rooftops, our guy, Adam Young, is our specialist for, he does the small ball game theory articles. He's our master of all points and head-to-head contests, and actually a pretty good NFBC player. His first 2 years ever playing in the NFBC auction, he ended up top 12 overall each year and won his league both times. And Adam Young won the FSWA award for baseball writer of the year. So congrats, Adam.
Another award for the FTN crew. Great job, Adam. That is a big accomplishment. So that's pretty cool.
One other cool thing related to that is, you know, Adam, he wrote a piece that will be out by the time you hear this that is specific around our brand new custom rankings and projections tool that came out. And this will be the hub where you will be able to, first of all, see projections and be able to build out your rankings for your custom league. So any Roto League formats, you've got a 5x6 with OBP, OPS, saves plus holds, whatever you're looking for, or any points formats, you can go in and set your custom rankings, or use the default from CBS, ESPN, Yahoo, or NFBC, and get these rankings. The other cool thing about it is you not only get the VDP, but there's also an option to see the FTN model, which is obviously run by Frank and the simulation. So you have, two sets of rankings there. Jason was telling me earlier before the show, he thinks my stolen bases are, SGP's a little high. That's something I'm going to look into, dig into. You want something more balanced, you can go ahead and look at the FTN model, but lots of options there. Another thing we set into it is setting your pitcher and hitter split limit. So whether that be 70-30, 64-36, whatever it is that you want to do to create the action values you want, you have all that control. So Adam is writing an article about how to use it. I'm going to record a tutorial and show people how I would use it. Just really, really cool, innovative things happening.
Yeah, I was playing around with it earlier, and I'm lucky I don't do any other leagues now than just the NFC. But I had an OBP league before, and this tool would have been so valuable for me for my rankings. Just, plug in OBP instead of batting average, and it spits out the brand new rankings. And like Vlad was saying, it's nice to jump back and forth between two different sets of rankings to kind of keep, yourself honest with it and kind of fact check the VDPs versus the FTNs, just invaluable. And then the pitching hitting split, I thought that was awesome to be able to do. Hey, I want to go heavy pitching, so I got to value the pitchers this way, or I want to dedicate less towards pitching. And, being a big auction player, that's really valuable for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the Towers 50-round draft and hold that we do every year. And the flip of that is that it's a 5x5 roto, but it is OBP instead of average. And since I play mostly on NFC, my brain doesn't really think in that term, in those terms. And though we do projections for everything, like OBP is something that is a product of, you know, of other inputs. And so I generally know, you know, players' OBPs, but then factoring in the ranks for that is really tough. So being able to see OBP rankings in my own models and wonder, you know, do I really want to grab Zach Geloff here in the 20th round versus maybe somebody that won't give me as much, you know, front four category production, but maybe give me a better OBP. So it's really fun to play with.
Yeah, just another great tool from FTN. So they keep them coming.
Keep them coming. All right. Spring training news, hot and heavy. You know, I remember last year you were drafting, I think, a main event in the little window period of time where Gunnar Henderson had a little preseason injury. And so if I'm not mistaken, you got one of the best deals of Gunnar Henderson through the entire main event in those few, that little few day window.
Yeah, I'd imagine that I got the max last year. I had the 15th pick, and I got him first pick of the fourth round. And man, did that help that team tremendously. Just it was a gift. I don't remember what the injury was or why he fell so far. I would imagine it was a little blip and some sort of injury. But it's kind of, you know, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Take the value and, you know, run with it. And that's what I did. And you know, this might be a little window in the online championships to do the same thing, because he's going to fall a little bit with everybody's worried about these obliques. You know, could be a week, could be 8 weeks. So it'll be interesting what the diagnosis was. It looks like it was just precautionary, but a lot of coach speak still.
Yeah, so Gunnar Henderson's dealing with some side discomfort. And like you said, it does appear precautionary, but the market is incredibly reactionary around this time. I started a new underdog dinger this Thursday morning. I had the 11th pick, and Gunner is usually always gone by then. And there he was staring at me with pick 11. You know, one of the crazy thing is I didn't even take him. I actually took Jose Ramirez because I really feel like I just don't have a lot of Jose, and that all is probably going to end up biting me. So I kind of wanted to mix him in, but like, it almost felt crazy letting Gunnar Henderson go there. I mean, in Roto, he was the overall player number 8.
So you were part of the reactionary draft crew then?
Yeah, but yes, I guess I was.
Yeah, Ramirez is a pretty good fallback on that pick, so it's hard to fault you for that one.
His teammate Jordan Westberg, we've seen him get a lot of helium lately. We've seen him go in the 12 team OCs. I've seen him go in what is the fifth round. He's kind of getting the junior Caminero hype. And we talked about it in the corner infield episode, but it's interesting. I mean, you know, these Orioles are great. I think Tyler O'Neill had a quote today about, he just kind of loves the vibe of this team and just everybody's like, you know, doing different things. Jackson Holliday's like working on his footwork. A lot of good things going on, but obviously the Gunner and Westberg, he's dealing with a sore back. Is I don't know, maybe just slightly concerning.
Yeah, and then there's so many mouths to feed on that Baltimore lineup. You know, Westberg might not play every day. They have so many different options. They have Kobe Mayo that's not supposed to play right now. They have Heston Kerstad who's not supposed to play right now, but the coach said we need to get him in the lineup. Yeah, Ramon Laureano, who signed a $5 million deal as what, their fifth outfielder. Ryan O'Hearn still there. Mountcastle at there is a ton of capable bodies there, and there's going to be a value play, and then there's going to be a severe overdraft. And I'm trying to figure out where it was, because I was all in on Colton Cowser, and I'm starting to get really concerned that the at-bats I was projecting are not going to be there.
You know, what's funny is where we are with these players at different times throughout the preseason, because I started off high on Colton Cowser. I then kind of soured a little bit. And then now I'm kind of like up on him again, because I'm just don't have a lot of Colton Cowser, and they're talking about really having him maximize his speed and maybe, you know, hitting the bags a little bit more. And for a couple of these guys, they're really going to work. It seems to me like they're going to run a little bit more. But let me tell you, I have spent more time as far as playing time, projected playing time. I've spent more time on the Baltimore Orioles offense than I think just about any team. Because it's a very tough nut to crack, and you basically alluded to it. You have guys like Kobe Mayo and Heston Kerstad who don't have a place to play. You got a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, who the more I dug into as I was preparing the corner infield episode is like, you know what? I have him for 300-ish plate appearances. He's obviously much, very much deserving of more. And he's completely transformed as a player from this sort of higher strikeout, low contact guy with Kansas City, you know, home run or nothing, to like a very solid contact guy with power, barrel rate, the whole deal. And even him, like, I mean, how are you fitting all these guys? And even Ramon Laureano was totally fine. He's a short side platoon guy. This offense is loaded. I'm now looking at roster resource. They got Ryan, my boy Ryan Mountcastle's getting done dirty. It forecasted eighth in the lineup.
Yeah, I just not only forecasted eight, but is he going to be platooning? And if that's a platoon, he's on the small side. And I know how much you like Mountcastle. I feel the same. That guy, he needs 550, 600 at bats to go. It's going to be a tough nut to crack. And I do not know if the preseason is going to show us. Spring training, it'll be fascinating what happens because. You know, Ryan O'Hearn really did fall off in the second half. I was using him right in the hot hand in the first half. He was really, you know, subpar in the second half. So I wonder if they're viewing his spot as maybe Kerstad's spot. So I don't know what's coming because they have all of these stud players that need to get the playing time or should not be sitting on the bench. They should be down in AAA. So it's time to find some value there.
There's nothing more obvious to me than a deal for a pitcher. Like I hope that they're still talking on trying to get Dylan Cease, but you're looking at a rotation with, you know, Zach Eflin and Grayson Rodriguez in the lead. And after that, it's all a little dicey. I mean, the guy that came over from Japan, one of the best pitchers the league over there, Tomoyuki Sugano, he had a nice outing. It was his first one here in the States, had a little bit of visa issues, two clean, nice scoreless innings. But other than that, it's like 41-year-old Charlie Morton, Dean Kramer, I'm not a big fan of. Like, there has to be something to get them some pitching.
Yeah, I thought the trade deadline last year was terrible for Baltimore, and now the offseason's been a follow-up to that. If you're an Orioles fan, you're ready to win now, and they have the pieces to get it done, and they're not spending the money. And then, they're not making the trades. They're not cashing in their pieces. You know, and one other piece in that lineup with Baltimore is Gary Sanchez got $8 million. He's not just going to catch one day a week. He's going to play probably DH against lefties. So just another headache to deal with. But, they're ready. I do like Zach Eflin. I do like Grayson Rodriguez. They really need Grayson to become an ace to make this work, but they are one arm short. They're that Corbin Burns short they let walk. You think Garrett Crochet would have been a perfect fit for them, and now he's, you know, with the team they're competing against for the NLE or AL East.
Yeah, you lose a guy like Corbin Burns. I mean, if I was doing a DC, I'd still be drafting Cade Povich. Like, the fact that he's fallen out of the top 500 doesn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah, even the darling Chase McDermott, he's an electric arm. I mean, they need guys to miss bats come playoff time.
Another team in the AL East, the Toronto Blue Jays, they've got a little bit going on. It's one of those incredibly top-heavy lineups. The addition of Anthony Santander to give Vladimir Guerrero Jr. some protection. You got Bo Bichette, George Springer. And now, I guess, good news on Dalton Varsho, who has been a bit of a fade with our rankings, or with my rankings at least, but he is still ruled out for opening day, but I think we can move him up a little bit. He had the right rotator cuff surgery in September, but he's about to be cleared for spring training. So there's Varsho, and then there is the fact that George Springer is not a lock, or he's going to be mixed in as one of the leadoff men. We saw Andrés Giménez do some leadoff work. If there's an opportunity for him to lead off, I mean, that's going to probably, you know, have him crank into the top 150 or so.
Yeah, because Giménez was initially roster resource, I think, had him batting sixth or seventh. So leading off in that Blue Jays lineup ahead of Bichette and Vlad, man, that could be valuable. And it's what does that do to Springer's value? A lot of it was, you know, comes to the 18 stolen bases last year. If he's batting fourth, fifth, you got to think those stolen base attempts are drying up. Batting average is already low. Power is starting to slip. I think people are looking at that stat from last year, the 18 stolen bases and all the runs, and they might be in for a fool's gold this year with Springer.
And the thing is, I mean, he's kind of appropriately priced. Like every time I kind of look at it and I'm wondering, man, like really it's fallen that far that George Springer's like a, you know, going around 250. And when you kind of really dig in and you see some of the players around there, it is hard to click on his name over some of those people. And we're looking right now at, looking at the NFBC ADP specifically for the 12 team online championships, he's right there. He's a 249 ADP with a min of 228, which I don't think I could do, a max of 282. And the outfielders that are going around him are guys like Nolan Jones, TJ Friedl, likely leading off for the Reds, Garrett Mitchell, I guess, you know, still strong side platoon. And Jordan Walker has been creeping up over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a kind of pick your cake at, you know, that there's much different skill sets. And, I think Springer makes more sense in a 15 team league because he does post up every day and play. The 12 team, there's not as much upside, but, you know, teach their own. Everybody's got their own way to build a roster. The low batting average is a real struggle for me without the power to absorb it or to help out lift the batting average up.
The other interesting thing, I was going to bring up the Yankees. Is there anything else you wanted to say about Toronto or Varsho or anyone?
No, I mean, I think Varsho is a little mispriced, really down year last year, batting average wise, but he's kind of a Springer light, I guess, you know, chippy steals, going to 10 to 15, like, you know, decent power. So if you can get him, you know, after pick 300, it could be a little value there, but it depends where his draft cost ends up because they desperately need his defense out there. He will play every single day when he's healthy.
All right. The Yankees, you've got a little competition for the leadoff spot. I have heard some good things about Anthony Volpe. Looking good, barreling the ball better, hitting for higher average exit velocity. So you got him in the mix. You got Jason Dominguez, who I think everyone who listens to this pod or at least follows my stuff knows that I'm a huge Jason guy, and hopefully it's not kind of drinking my own Kool-Aid there. Thankfully, Jared Karibas cooled things off a little bit for me today. Talking about how he was like the most brutal left fielder he's ever seen, which is good. I just like that overall, like, you know, hey, douse my guys so that I can get a better deal on them. But again, we don't really know who's going to be leading off. There's even been some talk of DJ LeMahieu, but Jazz could make a lot of sense too. Like if Jazz is leading off, I mean, you're talking about maybe a guy that even can compete for, you know, the AL stolen base crown.
Yeah, man, it just threw open my mouth here in DJ LeMahieu leading off. But I think while you were talking, Jason Dominguez misplayed another ball in left field.
Has it been that bad?
Oh, I mean, some of the stuff I've seen and read, it's true butcher, but they do not have a choice but to run him out there. They have no backup options. They need that bat in the lineup, and they're going to suffer with the defense. So I don't know if that drops any of the Yankees pitchers, like the Gerrit Cole types that, you know, more fly ball pitchers. But you think a guy with that much minor league seasoning would be able to catch a fly ball a little more.
Maybe he's more comfortable in center field. I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah.
I know it's harder, but you know.
Yeah. I think they got a pretty good guy for there, don't they?
Yeah. That's what I hear. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton at this point, I think we talked about it, just off the board. Like, I mean, he may not even play this year, right? For all we know.
Yeah. But just, I guess, weightlifting finally got to him.
Yeah, I like the team, obviously, and hopefully everything falls into place. But really, not knowing, them being so fluid, the Yankees, as far as what they're doing at the top of the lineup, it has a lot of influence on where these guys are going. For me, if I knew Anthony Volpe was going to be the leadoff guy, and there really was no competition, I would have no problem taking him. You know, what is it? Eighth round, 120, 130 in a 15 teamer. If he's going to hit in the bottom third, I think that definitely douses his value a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think that, ADP does. Is that a 4-round difference if he's batting first compared to eighth? If the news came out, you know, week before we're drafting that he's batting first, or if it came out he's batting eighth, what do you think his ADP fluctuates about? 50 picks, 60 picks?
I don't think that much, because I think there are a lot of there's a huge like New York contingent that just are, you know, they just love Anthony Volpe, and it really doesn't matter. And he can produce from there too. And as we know with these things, they are very fluid. So just if something is said, oh, Jason Dominguez is going to be our leadoff guy to start the season, if it's kind of framed in that way, that means he can lose that spot, right? If he's not walking, getting on base or whatever, it's very possible that, and Volpe happens to be surging at that point, it, you know, that's the game, right? Like, we're going to where the puck is going, like Gretzky said, not where it is.
Yeah, there's nothing locked in stone because there's no track record for any of these guys. So you can get the job and lose it pretty quickly. So yeah, you're right. It doesn't, just because it's named opening day does not mean much for the rest of the season.
Anything else in the American League? You want to touch on the Angels?
Yeah, there was a news blip that Zach Neto is due back before the end of April, and seems like good news. You know, shoulder surgery, scary, you know, ahead of plan or ahead of the timeline. Well, what was the timeline? So we don't really know what that means. Is that good? Is that bad? Does it change your draft evaluation for him at all with that news he's coming back before the end of April?
It brightens it a little bit for me, because I've been the low ranking on him since the rankings came out in November. So we're talking like 75 to 100 picks below his ADP. So he was going early 200s. I did not recommend it, didn't touch it. Again, that was DC season. That was draft champion season, and just not wanting to lock in at that pick. Now it doesn't change all that much, because this was kind of the expectation, but it changes in a positive, because it looks like he's on a good track. I think because we are trying to wire ourselves to be a little bit more standoffish and kind of being careful with risk with guys that are already injured and then are delayed, him, Nico Horner, these type of guys. I usually want no part of that in DC season, but I'm open to it later. It just always depends on the price. But if he's going like early 200s, you know what? There are a lot of players all within those ranges that I'm not going to force that pick, I don't think.
Yeah, and that power drip or drop after shoulder surgery is a real thing. I mean, look at Fernando Tatis the year he came back after that shoulder surgery. Every metric dropped significantly. So it usually takes a good, at least 16 months after shoulder surgery to really get your power back.
Speaking of the Angels, I think, was it last week you were making fun of me for drafting Tim Anderson? He, the guy hit a miraculous home run, I guess, in spring training. He's kind of pumped to be here.
Ball's got to be juiced again.
That's good. I'm seeing roster resource with Mike Trout at the top of the lineup as of now. Again, listen, I saw Giancarlo Stanton fourth on the Yankees lineup. So, you know, who knows? But I know Jason RR super on top of his stuff here and following the trends of everything. But again, I'll say it again. I don't hate this offense. I really kind of like this offense. A lot of it has to do with Mike Trout's health, Taylor Ward's health, Renjifo obviously as well. But I like Jorge Soler. I like Nolan Schenwell in another full season. Moncada, maybe he's got a little bit of a spark. Joe Adele, I really, really don't mind this offense.
Yeah, and there's a young stud coming up, Christian Moore. They'll find a place for him at some point probably in the season. And, you know, a lot of it's health driven. There's a lot of question marks there. When all nine starters are healthy, it's a pretty good lineup. But it's a big if with that team and the injury history. So starting the year on paper, it's pretty good looking. So we'll see how they can, you know, manage the year. And, you know, Mike Trout is value right now if you believe he's going to play 120, 130 games where he's going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm starting to come around to it. I'm really afraid that I'll be the one holding the bag when it comes down to it in the main event. But I am definitely going to try to be a little bit more, more risk averse this season. What's a bummer? Scott Kingery, my like late round guy who I thought was going to make the team. He's actually, you know, he's hitting .429 in spring. Doesn't mean much, but he's kind of on the outside looking in. They've got JD Davis. Remember him? He's not even 32. He's up trying to make the team. And then, you know, that spot that Kingery would have potentially had while they wait for Neto is kind of, you know, in trouble, because they've got Kevin Newman, who obviously isn't all that great, but they signed him to a 1-year, $5 million deal. Then they got Tim Anderson trying to make the team. So I don't know if it's good for Kingery.
Yeah, you got to follow the money. He's got an uphill battle. And, man, at least he got paid. So, hard to feel too bad for him.
He did. What about, let's switching over to the National League, then the Chicago Cubs. So they are getting ready to head out to Japan in a couple of weeks. One thing we do know is that Nico Hoerner will not be joining him there. He's going to stay at the complex in Arizona. But the word is, similar to Neto, he may not be long for a return when the team comes back to the States and they, you know, resume the season there. But so it seems like he's maybe a little bit ahead in the timeline with than Zach Neto is.
Yeah. And, you know, the difference in Neto and Hoerner is that Horner's not a power guy. So the shoulder surgery, because I believe he had shoulder surgery, correct, Vlad?
Yep.
That is, should not impact. He's a bat the ball guy. So it's always fascinating. I think this is the second or third time there's been, you know, overseas games actually start the regular season before we draft in Vegas, and how much this impacts draft costs. If Nico Hoerner and Matt Shaw don't make the trip to Japan, they're gonna free fall in drafts. You know, if somebody goes 0-for-8 on the Dodgers, if Mookie Betts goes 0-for-8, he's gonna drop to round 2 just for, because of those two games. I mean, look at Yamamoto last year. He got lit up in Korea, and you know, he fell pretty hard. So, you know, it's an overreaction, especially with that. But, and then, you know, obviously you get an early save from somebody or a win, you know, they jump way up, you know. So it's fascinating what that happens. But yeah, Nico Hoerner is really interesting. He seems closer than Neto, but it's still, there's not enough news to get me comfortable drafting him yet.
And I apologize, I didn't misspeak. It's it was an elbow thing. So he
elbow, not shoulder.
Yeah, it was like a mid-October surgery for this right flexor tendon. With Hoerner, I feel like my issue would be more if it was like a lower leg injury, because his value is in the batting average. You know, he's a great contact guy, speed. We need a name for this, by the way. It's like the target play. You know what I mean? Like you're super low on stolen bases. You're in the 10th round. And Xavier Edwards is there, right? Like, or you need power late, and there's like Brandon Lau or, you know, Garrett or whoever. Like, we got to come up. Maybe something will come to us in the show, but
category panic.
Category panic, guys. CPGs. CPGs. There, we did it. I like it. Also with the Cubs, the wonder who is Matt Shaw. Is also slipping a little bit in drafts. He's dealing with the oblique, that dastardly oblique. He may or may not be ready in time for Japan. I'm not too, don't feel too strongly that he's actually going to make that trip. And obviously that's not ideal, but he is getting close to his debut in the Cactus League. But if they go without Hoerner or Matt Shaw, it might be some combo of John Birdie and Vidal Brujan playing third base for the Cubs in Japan.
Get ready, those Dodger pitchers, the Cubs death lineup. But I did read that Shaw was not going to be making the trip to Japan, but I guess that could change. He also, it looks like he's going to start playing in games or here in the next week, but I think they're not going to get him ramped up quick enough. You know, I miss the days where guys were in the dugout smoking cigarettes and having a Coke. There, nobody knew what an oblique was back then. This workout stuff, you know, it's crazy how the game's changed with what injuries happen now with the, you know, how tight everybody's bodies are, you know, the soft tissue injuries.
Yeah, I think Tyler O'Neill has on his mantle, on the fireplace, what do you call it? Like, you know, you have people like stuffed, they have like stuffed deers or whatever. He's got an oblique on his mantle.
And a hammy.
And of course the old hammy. The Reds, they've got Christian Encarnacion Strand playing a little first, a little bit third, but more on the first base side. Jaime Candelario is playing, you know, some third base. You got Matt McClain, had a nice showing a couple of days ago. Really nice to see, especially those that are overexposed. But he had a 3-for-3 outing, 2 doubles, flashed some power with a homer. So he's looking good. TJ Friedl looks like he's the leadoff guy there. Obviously, Ellie, as Jay Kuchek said today in the spring training roundup, Ellie doing Ellie things, hitting homers, stealing bases. Does that get in your head at all from our conversation last week about Ellie?
No, spring training does not. And I can't get over his stolen base attempt rate. If that normalizes, you might be looking at 35 steals, which is still really good, but it's not what you're drafting him for. So, you know, I will probably have an Ellie if the price is right. You know, if I'm at pick 5, 4, even I might take him, but not somebody I'm really looking at, not something I'm going to set my KDS for. So it's going to take a lot for him to get on my team.
That's a good question for you. Do you have a 4? Because, you know, from Mike Mager's studies of the ADP, I'm sorry, of the overall winners in the main event, it's actually quite surprising how so many teams from the back third of the draft, like picks 11 to 15, how many have won over time. But I believe the 4 spot, and of course, this is not a reason to not draft 4, I don't think at least, but the 4 has been the lowest number of overall wins. But if you did happen to fall into a 4 pick, is it Ellie? Is it Jose Ramirez for the sort of floor, or is there someone else, or are you undecided?
Pretty undecided. You know, the thing about the 4 and not prioritizing that KDS-wise, if for some reason Judge slips to 4, like he just did in a slow CI started, you're kicking yourself. You know, if all of a sudden I saw Otani go 4-1, you know, it's like, why did I not do that? But if you're sitting at 4, you know, come main event time, could you pull the trigger on a starting pitcher and push them up? Is it J-Ram and just get that solid production at 3rd? Is it one of the outfielders? Do you fall in love with Kyle Tucker? Do you go back to Gunnar Henderson if he's healthy? Or is it Ellie and get the speed and then kind of fight back on the batting average? There is something said, you know, my weakest category every year is steals. So that could really insulate me pretty quickly. But at this point, I do not have a 4, and 4 will be pretty low on my KDS. So I do not plan on having the 4th pick.
Yeah, I think 4 is a good spot if you are an Ellie guy. If you just, you are absolutely thrilled if you get one of the top 3 to drop, or you just love Ellie and you do want to insulate with those stolen bases, I think that's a good pick. I do like some of the builds I've had from the 4, and you do just kind of, you don't feel that stress of having to go, you know, charge hard after stolen bases, and possibly having to take somebody like a, not that it's a bad thing, but like a Peter Armstrong, Xavier Edwards, Andres Jimenez, but it's just, you know, it gives you a little more comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're not pushing speed, it's pretty nice. You know, the problem with me when I get a stolen base guy, I actually go the opposite way too much, and I still don't draft enough steals because I'm always trying to catch up on power. I'm like, oh, I got this. And all of a sudden I'm at 130 steals even with a 50 stolen base guy. So, you know, it's just continuing to hammer it, even though you got the big steals. And it might be good only projecting Ellie for 30 when you're drafting him, just so you have enough steals towards the end of the year.
Yeah, there's nothing, and especially if you think about how an injury just impacts that, right? Like if you draft Ellie and then you just cruise, you're like, oh, I'm good on stolen bases, that will come back to haunt you. And especially if he gets hurt, or for whatever reason he just starts running, that's going to hurt bad. You're going to be chasing that category all through the season. So there's something to keep in mind. You don't sort of take your foot off the brake in that realm.
Yeah. And last thing regarding the Reds, Vlad, you would think the management there would learn not to play these prospects at multiple positions and mess with their heads. Now they're doing it with CES. I wouldn't be surprised if Matt McClain played any center field, but you know, there was this pretty good prospect. His name was Nick Senzel, that they did this with, and they ruined him. Now they're doing it again. Just talk about an organization that has no idea what they're doing. It's very frustrating as a fantasy player, because there's some really exciting players, but man, these guys are human beings, and trying to learn 2 different positions, 3 different positions while you're trying to become a major leaguer, man, that's hard.
Yeah, because I've heard that they're going to use Gavin Lux at 2nd, at 3rd, in the outfield. Like these hey, listen, it's nice to be flexible and all, but you gotta, it needs to not be forced, I guess.
Yeah. There's a utility guy on the club for a reason. Everybody doesn't need to be a utility guy.
Exactly. Freddie Freeman, last hitter I want to ask you here about in spring training. He's been going around 27, 30 overall in drafts. I haven't seen his OC price lately, but you know, I've been a little bit higher on him in the market because I feel like people are overthinking at a guy that returns this incredible value every year and first round value every single year. And then he gets hurt and all of a sudden it's like, oh, but he's 35, he's dead. And you forget the fact that he plays for the Dodgers. And I understand the ankle thing. And but there was a report that came out on Thursday that he is going to be receiving treatment on that ankle probably for the first half of the season. And maybe resting in the day games after night games. So is the market going to heavily sort of respond to that? Are we getting to a point where he's going to go past pick 50 into the fifth round? And what's your, you know, is he off your board completely or are you still interested?
If I had to guess, if this is the actual news going in the draft season, he's falling past pick 50 pretty easily. You know, he's only going to get treatment halfway through the season. Why stop there? You know, treatment's going to happen all the way through the season. And, you know, the Dodgers are going to win so many games. They're not going to need to push him. When you start saying a 35-year-old's going to sit a day game after a night game, and then, you know, you have rainouts, you have double hitters, you're probably looking at 125, 130 games. If that's the case. And, man, plug that game into his projection instead of 155, you're looking at a significantly less valuable player. So he's fallen below the Pete Alonso types for me pretty easily with that news.
Yeah. I let's see. I mean, I'm seeing a 28 ADP in OCs over the last like 10 days or so. You know what is the other thing I didn't think about? It all really depends on what happens in Japan. Right, because if he hits a home run,
yep,
then that nullifies whatever, you know, fall he does. If he goes over 8, maybe he falls out of the top 70, top 80.
Can you imagine him legging out a double and limping, and what that does to his draft cost?
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, you know, I got to watch him. I don't know how healthy he really is. So, yeah, exactly. And then the whole thing about compounding risk. You grab a guy like that, then you get a DeGrom, and then, oh, let me get a Strider. And then all of a sudden you're, I understand it's hitter pitcher there, but like you start getting into that stash. And before you know it, you're in trouble. You got a 7-person bench in the second week of the season and nobody to drop for these wonderful Fabs to add.
Why are you talking about my OC team I just drafted?
Oh, by the way, can I talk about it?
Please.
You made me want to just like jump into a draft right away. Can you share your pitching on this team? Like, I was so jealous, man.
Yeah, I had the 10th pick and I got Tarik Skubal in the second round. And then I got Jacob DeGrom in the 4th round. And then I took Spencer Strider in the 8th round. And that was about as much fun as I could have drafting a pitching staff. And my team name is the Three Aces. But, you know, the odds of this working out is very slim, but that's a lot of fun. And I did back it up with quite a few high upside pitchers, the Brandon Fotts, the Yusei Kikuchi, the Robbie Ray. So I didn't just punt pitching after that. So I think I'm insulated to deal with the chaos I'm going to endure. But if I can go get the innings I'm projecting from that group, it could be a lot of fun on my ratios.
You know, you can get 75% of what an average projection is on those guys, and you might have one of the top pitching staffs in the OC. Like, so I don't even know if what you just told me makes me want to draft another one or makes me want to just not draft at all, because like that's a beaut.
And then I took the entire boring old offense. So, you know, I took the risk with the pitching and I went the Altuve types that I never get on the offense, just to try to stabilize somewhere on it.
God damn, man. I love fantasy baseball so much, dude. Like, there's so many ways to build, like just this roster construction, game theory. Man, I love this.
The puzzle is just amazing. It's why it's so hard to not keep drafting, because it's just amazing.
I know, man. I can't wait. I'm doing another OC, or my I haven't done an OC since December, so I'm really pumped to get into 12-team mode.
I do need to shout out to Greg at the NFBC and doing these slow online championships this year, and I hope they pick up more steam for next year. I know today was the last day for them, but it's been a pleasure drafting those and kind of, you know, satisfies the drafting itch without getting in too many live drafts. So, you know, next year, I hope those really pick up more steam as well.
Indeed, indeed. Starting pitchers, just touch on these guys real quick. Tell me if any of these guys are interesting to you. Max Meyer on the Marlins, topping out near 98 in his spring debut. It's about 2 miles. In last season, he was at around, averaging around 96.5 miles per hour, which is about, 94.5. And now he's averaging 96.5. So nearly a 2 mile per hour bump. Of course, he is still on the Marlins. Was a top prospect. So you got him. We touched on Sagano of the Orioles, look good in his first appearance. The plan was for him to throw 35 to 40 pitches. He only needed 28 of pitches to go to scoreless, just one walk, two hits. 17 of those 28 pitches were strikes. Brandon Woodruff, really, obviously we know has fallen off in ADP, but obviously he threw a sim game around 30 pitches. He might actually get into the schedule here in the Cactus League and might get going. So that's obviously going to have a big boost for him.
And he came out and said he's healthy, right? Like he made a big point about that to say that. And I know he was trying to make a point, but it matters.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I went from when draft season started, like I'm all gung-ho Woodruff to, you know what? I'm taking risks earlier in the draft and I have a lot of Sasaki. I have a lot of Grom. I don't want to add to that, but if you think about it, if you get even, not half of, but like even 75, 80% of the Woodruff that we saw in the past, even if it is at 140 innings, if that's what it ends up being, you're getting a steal after pick 200.
The guy is a legit ace.
And then, you know, Max Meyer, I just touched on, and then Tony Gonsolin. I like the guy. I mean, one of the few players that over the last few years has got like a, you know, career ERA under 3, is very impressive. He's making moves, but he is fighting for that fifth spot in the Dodgers rotation. He threw 3 scoreless innings on Thursday. Bobby Miller will probably get a start going here soon. He did have that scare on a comebacker, got hit in the head. I think light concussion. Is there such a thing as a light concussion? I don't even know what I'm talking about, but you know.
Ask Gronk.
Yeah, yeah. A lot more than light concussions there. But I want to see Bobby Miller come up and just shove in and make a real fun competition out of that fifth spot.
Yeah, I just want to see Bobby Miller back on the mound after that line drive off his head. That was scary. But yeah, Tony Gonsolin, every time he's on the mound and healthy, pitches really good. Could be really big value this year, especially if he can get in that rotation while Otani's getting right. And then, you know, as they go a 6-man, 6-day, keep it. He's pretty cheap for a lot of skills there.
What about the closers? We got some activity going on there, signing and some injury news.
Yeah, Felix Bautista's through his second live batting practice, 25 pitches. The coach Brandon Hyde's trying to get him 7 spring training appearances so he can be part of the opening day. You know, still a big risk. You're not going to pitch on back-to-back days probably for the first half of the year. The guy was the number one closer 2 years ago. So he's extremely talented. So there's a big risk there. What are your thoughts on Felix right now?
I like Felix Bautista a lot, and I think around where he's going, I feel like he's going after the second tier, like even after like Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners, John Duran of the Twins, and like kind of right before Hoffman. I feel like they're just being cautious with him, but it's been so long since the injury, and I think he'll be fine. I feel like it's a little bit of an overreaction in the market, and I'm interested, but I don't want to see him pitch.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting come main event time where these closer prices kind of regulate. DC season, they're always pushed up round or two higher than what they are come draft season, but you miss out on that top tier. It gets pretty ugly, and You know, I'll say pretty ugly, but both these guys were really good last year. Carlos Estevez and Kyle Finnegan, both different news. Estevez has some back tightness, and then Kyle Finnegan just signed back with the Nats. You know, Finnegan will be the closer. You got to think Estevez will be the majority closer with Lucas Urseg being high leverage. But who would you rather have right now if you're on the clock and we'll just say round 11 in a main event? Who are you clicking the button on and why?
I'm very stubborn and I don't recommend you do, you know, as I say, everyone do your own research, but I'm just not drafting Kyle Finnegan. I just don't care. I think he's a guy, it's a ticking time bomb the last few years, just like waiting for the shoe to drop, and call me stubborn, but I think it does at this point. I also know Davey Martinez really has a thing for Jose Ferrer, and they have Jorge Lopez there too. Derek Law is in the mix. I think obviously you follow the money, like you said, and Finnegan's the guy, but if he starts to falter a little bit, we saw it before, right? A couple years ago when he was slipping, Hunter Harvey started getting save opportunities, and they had no problem moving Finnegan to the eighth as he struggled. So if it was between the two, you know, I guess I would say Carlos Estevez, but honestly, I love Lucas Urseg so much, even more than Estevez, because, you know, we've talked about it. I think we both, you know, agree Urseg's a better pitcher, and Quatraro, the manager there, wants to use Urseg in higher leverage roles. But if this lower back thing ends up going a little further, you know, worse than it is, then that's going to impact, obviously, Estevez and Urseg and that whole thing. I think the best idea is just to, like, you know, get other closers, stay away from both situations.
So the answer is none of the above?
Yeah, if you made me choose, it'll be Estevez.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
I heard a stat this morning, I forget what podcast I was listening to. Kyle Finnegan had 97% of the save opportunities for Washington.
Last season?
That's an amazing number last year. So, yeah. And I have not fact checked that. So, but he had 38 saves. But it'll be interesting how if he can hold on to that job, because they do have Jorge Lopez and they do have, I think it's Ferrar, you said?
Yeah. Jose Ferrar. But he's the lefty and they can use they're also adding dudes. They got Lucas Sims, who, you know, massive walk rate. But again, poor guy who played in Cincy all those years. They added Colin, you know, Poche. I don't know. I feel like a Genstad correction coming on. I should know that last name. But he's an NRI. He's trying to.
We'll go with Poche.
Yeah, it just sounds, yes, exactly. Robert Poche. Probably Colin Poche. You could tell I've been watching Rays games. So, I mean, they got a lot of guys there. And again, listen, it's Washington, but like, I don't like my relievers to damage me. And I feel like a guy like him or Alexis Diaz or, you know, just Chapman, I think is a little dangerous too. If like somehow he ends up being the closer, I want to feel safe with my relief pitchers. So that's why I've come not into those guys.
Well, and that's a good point. If you're drafting Finnegan or either the guys you mentioned, it's a one category. Pitching's five categories: strikeouts, ERA, WHIP, and Finnegan's hurting you in all of those. He's below average on strikeouts, so you know you need those saves desperately. And if you can get your 30 saves, it'll be worth it. But you better, you know, have some good starters to absorb the bad ratios.
Yeah, and that stat does sound right, because there were only 40 total saves from Washington Nationals last year. Finnegan got 38 of them. Derek Law got one. Jose Ferrer got one.
Pretty amazing. well, that's some. Davey Martinez gave him the ball every single time. So, and he was pretty successful.
Yep, it's true. I mean, I think the only guy. Oh, you know, even Class A didn't even have such a high rate. Like, I think Class A has the most saves. You know, highest save percentage in baseball over the last few seasons of his team. But, you know, they had. I mean, they had 55 saves, and he got 47 of them. So the percentage isn't as high, but obviously, you know, that's a lot more saves.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we are going to talk a little bit about outfielders, and we're just going to cover today the top 150 because, you know, again, we could have a full episode just on spring training stuff, and that would have been good, but we do want to cover some outfielders. I already did most of the housekeeping, but you know the place, ftnfantasy.com. Get in there, especially now as we get into March draft season, custom rankings tool, all the fantastic content. We just had DraftKings best ball rankings released, so you can get in on that. I'm going to do another top 500 update. I'm going to update the 12-team gritty and getting ready for my drafts there, spring training reports, and then we've got a special underdog best ball strategy article. It's a guest you'll probably recognize when you see him, but I'll wait to for that surprise for next week. And then we're a couple of years away. This year's Yelich article will be coming out mid-March. So look out for that. Get 15% off either package, the standard or the high stakes. And it's spring 15 is the code for 15% off. All right. Outfield.
Vlad, why don't you just go ahead and put in the chat who this year's Yelich is? It's killing me.
I'm already getting the DMs. I'm already getting the PayPal offers. I'm just like, come on, man. Like,
you need to put it on eBay.
Give me some
bit up.
Dude, hilarious. All right, outfield guys. So, you know, obviously you got that first tier guys. I think Aaron Judge is, you know, kind of in his own island there in the outfield. Typically a top three pick if you're in points leagues or different formats or best balls. I've seen him taking it one, which I won't argue against. And this is not just one overall outfield. This is overall. So, but he's usually settling in at around pick three. And now here comes the most interesting part of the draft, which is the, you know, you have a middle first round pick and you have so many different ways that you can start and get your build on. And, you know, there's Kyle Tucker on the Cubs. There's Juan Soto on a new team with the Mets. You got Corbin Carroll getting some speed up front for the Diamondbacks. And then I don't know, like, is Fernando Tatis to you part of this group, or is there some like concern about his like kind of health history or just his style that keeps him out from this group and with the next group?
Yeah, he's in that group of Carroll, Tucker and Soto, but he's the last of that group. I think he's still a class above the Julio, Mookie, Churio, Alvarez group, but I still think Tatis belongs up there, and there is still that MVP season in there. I think we're talking last pod as I don't like the juju that's going on in San Diego right now, but man, I love watching Tatis. He is so much fun to watch play.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think, you know, people know I had him ranked pretty high. Really was feeling, you know, the good vibes of Tatis. I think I took him fifth or sixth in the draft without any reservation. I'm not doubting it. I'm fine with it. It's just the market dictates certain things, right? So if you're really feeling it, you're just feeling like the full season of good health, and obviously you know what he's capable of. He is a guy that has the potential to be the top overall player on the season. Then by all means, take him where you can. But the market is saying that he is, you know, after pick, you know, around pick 10 to 12. And in some cases, Julio Rodriguez is going ahead of him. I think a lot of people prefer the pitchers, Tarik Skubal and Paul Skeens, even ahead of him. So obviously we know those guys will be moving up come main season. But I think for the people, it's just a matter of between Carroll, Tucker, Soto, Tatis, even Julio, even Mookie Betts. It's just a matter of you know, who you are most comfortable with, and just pray that in, you know, that health is on your side, because we know 40 to 50% of these guys are not going to earn value or will, you know, miss significant, maybe 25% will miss significant time. That number will, you know, we don't know who that is and what it'll be. So, you know, if you're going off of just stats, they're all great. You all have to go beyond that. It's vibes, you know, it sounds as silly as it sounds. You have to go on that a little bit. And you also have to go on how you want to build. Like, you want the strong batting average and you don't care about not having steals. Maybe Soto's your guy. You like the balance of it all and aren't worried about, you know, Kyle Tucker moving to the NL. He's your guy. You know, benefits for Carroll, benefits for Tatis. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a fascinating group. And I think you said it perfectly. It's how do you want to build your team? Corbin Carroll has the speed, Juan Soto has the power and the batting average, and Kyle Tucker is the well-rounded one. For me, it's probably Kyle Tucker playing for his contract. Chicago does like to run. Looking at your VDPs, I would imagine if his shin's healthy, you're a little light on stolen base projections, but he's also in a worse ballpark for home runs. So I think he's my highest rated of that group. I really got to dig in and figure it out, because I know I'm going to have that decision come draft season. But at this point, it's Kyle Tucker for me of that group.
He's so good, man. He's really, really good. I've had so many difficult times where I'm sitting there between him and Corbin Carroll, and I do have Carroll, a tick ahead. It's quite just a small little tick, and it's just a little bit of a preference of getting that stolen base, and just liking his, you know, liking him to be even better this year. And the fact that the guy had such a horrible first half of the year and still, you know, 110 plus runs, and still he just got there, in some way, even though it was not the ideal season for him. So yeah, I like all those guys. You make a good point about Mookie Betts, but every time you see that shortstop outfield, it's just tempting, right? Like if he's sitting there at pick 14, are you not taking Mookie Betts?
I just had the 13th pick in Barf, and I passed on Mookie and took Tarik Skubal. And I don't think Skubal or Skeens would be there come main event season, so Mookie might be the fallback option, but he's at the very back end of that list for me, and I'll take him but not be like pumped about it. I was not excited about the drop in his underlying numbers, and I know he had a fractured hand middle of the season, but lowest barrel rate probably of his career, and it was at 6%. And the scary part for me, it was at 6% before the hand injury. Hard hit rate dropped significantly to 39% from 48% the previous year. You know, contact still elite, still K rate's the lowest it's ever been at 11%. So he's still really good, but you know, he's getting a little older. And are the Dodgers going to have him run a bunch? But every time I fade Mookie, he goes nuts. So if I am fading Mookie, I suggest drafting him this year.
What about him in relation to up-and-comer Jackson Churio, who he goes around the turn? I mean, I've seen him go 18. I've seen him go I saw him go 8 in an OC, which is crazy. I don't know. Is that you, Derek Van Riper from Milwaukee? Or Greg Ambrosius?
Get your guys, right? If you don't think he's making it back to you in the second round, then take him at 8. I'm taking Mookie ahead of Julio with Tex in front of Jackson Churio, in front of Jordan. So he's right in the right spot in the rankings. Jackson Churio really went off in the second half, looked like he belongs. It's just one of those guys. I'm probably going to be a year later than I need to be getting in on him. But his second half was really fun to watch. 14 steals, 12 homers, 46 runs, 47 RBIs, cut his K rate down to 18%. He's legit. Probably going to be a star, but I'm going to take somebody a little safer here early.
And then Yordan Alvarez, just need to point out that if you're playing in like a points format, and I'm just looking at the NF, based on our projections, or at least my projections, the NFBC like points per game, if you're doing the best ball or the cut line, the only outfielder averaging more points per game out of all these guys, higher than Yordan Alvarez is Aaron Judge. And it's like, 5.9 projected points per game for Judge, 5.7 for Alvarez. And then like in the, low to mid fives for most of the rest of those guys. So there's something to be said that light stolen bases aside, if by somehow, some way, Yordan Alvarez does play 150 games or more, you're getting a surefire first round pick and a guy that can, hit 50 bombs with 130 RBIs, Matt Olson type season, but with average.
Yeah, there is a massive season still in there, because he's been in the mid 30s home runs. He still hasn't peaked over 100 RBIs either in the last three seasons, which is surprising. I just did a double take, because he had 6 stolen bases last year. And I noticed you caught yourself about the steals. you went from steals to light steals.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I've never seen a 27-year-old with such bad knees. And at some point, whether it's running the bases or what, it feels like there's an IL stint coming. And man, having a guy with bad knees as your first pick, and I see in here you have 136 games played for him. That's probably right. So you need him to get to 145 to 150 to really make a first round pick work out for what he's given you. He'll still be really good and not hurt you, but I think if you think it's 136, I'm going to pass.
There is something about if you're playing in a 15 team, or if you're doing the main event qualifier, or you're doing a standalone or home league 15 teamer, or even the main event, think about how you feel about the players that are going in the 13 to 18 range. And if that works for you, like if you might want to pair that up, if you like what's going also in the mid 40s and in the mid 70s overall, which would be the third and fourth round and the fifth and sixth round, then maybe that's the spot for you, because I'm seeing a lot of guys that are very interesting and could pair well together, you know, not just the outfielders, not just Mookie Betts who could fall there, Jackson Churio, but you got Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You can go with one of the starting pitchers if you want. You know, Yordan Alvarez. I mean, there's a lot of goodness in that range. Is there any interest for you to start from there, or is it an uncomfortable build?
A little uncomfortable for me. You know, I'm usually waiting even later on outfield. I don't like forcing stuff, so it has to fall kind of perfectly for me. So if I'm going to take those outfielders in that range. So yeah, a little uncomfortable for me.
All right. The next tier, these are guys that are going in the ADP range of, I mean, middle of the second. So like 20 to even 40 overall, right? So you got Jazz Chisholm Jr., you got Jaren Duran, both those guys going around 20. So in a 12 teamer, that's a middle to end second rounder. You got Jackson Merrill is going there as well around pick 25. And then Michael Harris II. I have him in this tier, but his ADP is closer to 40. I am a big Michael Harris II guy. Probably might be a big Michael Harris III guy when he's up in 20 years. And then there's Ronald Acuna Jr. Let's talk about them.
You got to sell me on Michael Harris. Never had more than 76 runs, never had more than 64 RBIs. You know, he hasn't played more than 138 games, but, you know, he feels like a better thought than an actual reality. I love the bat to ball. I actually like the fact he doesn't walk, because he's putting the ball in play. He gets action. Decent K rate, but he hits the ball hard, but it doesn't produce the fantasy numbers. I think he's a better real life baseball player than a fantasy baseball player. So change my mind.
Well, he plays on the Braves. He is somebody that is a high contact guy, and he's an above average barrel guy. So hits the ball over 90 miles per hour, barrel rate's over 10%. The stats you alluded to is the fact that he first of all didn't play full seasons in any of those years. Like 2022 was his rookie year, where he basically went 19 and 20, like 19 homers, 20 stolen bases, and hit .297, but did most of it hitting like in the bottom third of the lineup. He's been kind of always getting screwed over for like an Ozzie Albies. And I think he's, you know, a much better player than Ozzie Albies. I think the only kind of wrench now while Acuna is out is the fact that Jerks and Profar is now in the mix. But the only other bugaboo with him is the fact that he is a sub 5% walk rate guy. So I think maybe that hurts him a little bit leadoff wise, but it's, if you like prorating his numbers to a full season, if you get a full season out of him, this is a 2025 guy with a 285, 290 average. And it's not just me projecting him for a high average. If you go on a Fangraphs and you're looking at all those sites there too, it's 287, 294, 280. He's like on that short list of people that, you know, get up in that range. So that's the good side of it. Of course, there's bad. You know, he gets, you know, kind of get caught stealing more, you know, may not be leading off or, you know, in the top part of the lineup because it is so juicy, and he's got a little bit of an injury history.
Do you see him batting above what, sixth in the lineup, fifth in the lineup?
Yeah, I think he can lead off even with the sub 5% walk rate, because he just gets on base a lot of hits, and he's got some speed.
But Atlanta's never shown the tendency even to get him near that spot, have they? Even when Acuna was out and Albies was out, have they put him up there?
Don't quote me on it, but I believe we saw it last year. I believe okay. I'd have to look it up, but I remember him getting the opportunity. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, and then when he came back from injury last year, he was really good. 15% barrel rate, raised the launch angle, 51% hard hit rate. Like I said, the stats are in there, and his batting average is going to be good. There's a high floor there. It just the counting stats, batting at the bottom of that lineup, are what scares me. And if he stays in that sixth spot, it does limit the upside.
So in September, I'm just looking up the game logs. He batted first the entire September.
Okay.
And the team was hurt. And, you know, everybody was like banged up. And it's like, you know, obviously you're not going to, you know, like Jared Kelnick, you kind of wore out your welcome. You don't get any more opportunities to lead off. But I'm curious. I'm just going to look up his splits in September and how he did for the rest of the season. Oh, dude. Yeah. He hit 316 in September with 8 homers, but then got caught stealing two of four.
Their entire team was hurt by then too.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it'll be fascinating what they do. Do they have Profar lead off? They've been batting Austin Riley at second in spring training. So are they going to have Albies lead off? He doesn't seem like a leadoff hitter either. So
no.
Until Acuna comes back. So I don't know what that lineup's going to do. I think some spring training lineups will give us a big kind of telltale as we get closer to the big drafts.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd say the split would be between hitting first and fifth until Acuna comes back, maybe a little bit more fifth, but I still think he has a shot.
Okay.
All right. Who else we got on this list? I mean, do we need to talk about Jackson Merrill?
You know, he's a guy I will not have any of, just absolutely went nuts last year and he's still improving. As a second round pick, I just feel like he's a better real life player than a fantasy player, but you know, would I be shocked if he went 30-20 and batted 290? No, but I'm not drafting it to bet on it this year.
Yep. I might as well say it on the pod. I've said it in other places, but yeah, it's like, Dave McDonald will not be happy about this because he loves Jackson Merrill, and I'm not to say that he won't earn the value there because he was amazing and he is improving and the lineup around him is great. You know, 5 category guy. He's absolutely fantastic. I think it's just kind of a hard and fast rule for me about rookies, you know, that early. Then again, which is funny, this is me questioning myself live on air, but then I'm okay with Churio, but I'm not okay with Merrill. Just, you know, something I guess for me to maybe chew on over the next few days.
There is another red flag for me is, and I got to double check this number, but in my notes, I have him as his WRC plus versus left-handed pitching at 82 last year, which is below league average. So that was a little surprising when I saw that too. And, you know, how many walk-off or game-winning homers did he hit? You know, that's just not feasible to continue, but, you know, elite versus right-handed pitching, and again, I want to double check those numbers, so don't hold me too much to the fire on those, but there is a concern there as well.
Yeah, he was the clutchest of clutch, and what he did as a rookie was insane. It was insane all from top to bottom. Ronald Acuna they're talking about maybe he won't be running as much when he's back. Probably the smart thing to do, but, you know, I think, you know, Ronnie might do what Ronnie got to do, so... I don't know.
Yeah. What is his not running as much? Is it only stealing 40 bags instead of 73?
Oh man. I don't know. I'm messing around with some Acuñas and underdogs or, you know, maybe gladiators I did, but I just cannot pick them around there. I just know I'm going to take risks later and I just can't do it with him there for, you know, possibly to my own detriment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, there's a big risk.
The next group of guys, this is a kind of a small little tier here. You got O'Neill Cruz, Wyatt Langford, James Wood, Teoscar Hernandez. I think maybe you could put Lawrence Butler in this group because he's been creeping. So how do you feel about those 5? Anyone stand out to you?
And give me some Teoscar Hernandez. He is undervalued again this year. He's going to bat cleanup for the Dodgers behind three of the best hitters in the league. Man, he's good. Barrel rate 14.9%, hard hit rate 46.7%. You know, he's going to strike out a bit. K rate's at 28.8%, but I think it's pretty easy to project him for around 100 RBIs and 30 homers going in the fifth round in outfield. Yes, please.
Yes. So I have a question, and I do not, I mean this in kindness. So who will he drive in if Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman aren't healthy and playing?
I think they have some replacements. Maybe Kiki Hernandez can go be their leadoff guy. And, you know, he's a pretty big fan favorite there. But they have some Hyesung Kim. You know, maybe they'll pull him up as a minors now that just paid him a bunch of money. You know, they have some replacement options.
Tommy Edman, he's getting some hype. He won't be part of this episode, but I mean, he almost might as well could be. If he has a hot camp, I can see him kind of jumping into the top 150. Or if for whatever reason, obviously, God forbid, there's like a Freeman or Betts injury in the preseason, and you see Edman in the top three. I mean, anything is possible, but he's obviously not a big batting average guy, but you know, get some stolen bases, some homers, and he's on the Dodgers. So I think it's a good mix.
I do need to question the James Wood draft cost. It feels like kind of a Vlad Guerrero before he figured out how to hit the ball in the air. 52% or 55% ground ball rate is scary. And he's going extremely high, first four rounds by ADP. There's a lot of growth expected there. Your projections, Steamer's projections, are not very bullish on him producing where his draft cost is. So is that just the kind of the new hot prospect thing where the ADP is going? What are your feelings?
Well, I mean, you know, per our values or per VDP values, you know, coming out like a $21 guy, even me being bearish on his numbers, if you would call, you know, my numbers bearish, he's still popping up there in that group. That's the thing. It's just like, a guy of his talent level, if he's playing 150 games, he hitting second in the lineup between Dylan Cruz and you know, some of these veterans, it's just a good spot to be in, and gives him a little room for growth. Like, you know, I only have 21 home runs projected. I think that he should clear that easy. So then maybe there's a little sort of cherry on top. With him, I feel like I'm more worried about like the high strikeout rate and, you know, kind of maybe prolonged slumps or things like that. But I think the talent is there to get there. But you're right. It does feel like there's something about him, even though the values end up that way, that maybe he just feels like he belongs more in like the Brenton Doyle group.
Yeah, it really feels like he's mispriced right there. But I do like me some Brenton Doyle. So we can jump there. Or is there anybody else you want to talk in that group?
That's good. No, I did want to point out that like, writing the outfield article and talking and looking again into O'Neill Cruz really just had me hype because just like, you know, it's just a reminder how all this stuff just, you know, everything Statcast metric wise, and it means something, right? It's all off the chain. It's all like, you know, bat speed is top in the league in all of baseball, you know, everything, max exit velocity, barrel rate. He's just a stud. And you know, what if you did flip him with Ellie De La Cruz and he was on the Reds, what, you know, his numbers look like? Granted, he's in Pittsburgh. It is what it is, but are we possibly missing a little upside with him?
Well, I just can't wait for our annual NFBC tradition of him hitting 121 mile an hour exit velocity in spring training and jumping up ADP two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Every single year it happens.
Like clockwork.
Yes, it really is.
Are you bumping the A? Are you more interested in the A's batters in Sacramento? I mean, you know the area well, right?
It's not necessarily the ballpark that I'm bumping it. I actually think the lineup's very sneaky this year. Really like Brent Rooker, like Lawrence Butler, Shea Bengaliers. They have a much deeper lineup. JJ Bleday turned into a pretty usable hitter. You know, Tyler Soderstrom's sneaky. They have a kid, Nick Kurtz, coming up at first base. You know, Zach Geloff, you know, they can kind of go down the lineup. You know, you got Jacob Wilson, you know, could win a batting title like we talked about in the middle infield episode. Plus that ballpark is going to play small. You know, the dimensions are pretty not, you know, bandbox, but you know, when it heats up in Sacramento, ball's going to fly. And I can't imagine the nighttime games, it not playing smaller than Oakland does at night. Cause Oakland gets, you know, that marine layer that, really impacts it, you know. And then the other big factor is how many outs these hitters, or how many at bats the hitters got taken away from with the foul ground at the Coliseum. They probably, you're probably talking 10 to 15 at bats per hitter losing it because of a foul ball got caught that would be in the seats at every other stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even the upside for a guy like Lawrence Butler is, I mean, it's 30-30. It literally is. And that's why you see people kind of drafting him high. Look at the ballpark, the talent, a couple of the two home run games, three home run games, just like that explosive upside is very, very intriguing. You know, Brenton Doyle, I do like. I don't think he's necessarily going to hit for that high average, but I think the gains he made with reducing his strikeout rate last year was impressive. Everything I read about him is he's just one of those like really well-disciplined, like works hard. I mean, listen, a lot of the guys work hard and some don't, but he's, you know, he played college ball at VMI, the Virginia Military Institute. Like he's like kind of, you know, that mentality. And I think his just job is safe, is secure. He is going to lead off for the Rockies all year. As far as I'm concerned, he's going to get, you know, 85, 90 runs, hit 20 homers, could steal 30 to 40. Maybe it's 25. I don't know, but he's got good speed. And listen, he might hit 230, but I think those are pretty fair projections for him.
Yeah. I do need to circle back to Lawrence Butler really quick before diving into Brenton Doyle, who I do like, but I really like Butler. The fact he got sent back down and he came back up and succeeded. He got sent down and he came back up and dropped his K rate from 30.7% to 20.6%. His OPS went from 529 to 943. You know, those prospects that come up and struggle and get sent down and come back up and figure it out, those are the ones to look out for the next year. And I really believe that he could be that guy. As far as Brenton Doyle goes, you know, I think his batting average is a little safer than, you know, the 230 floor just because of Coors. It makes your BABIP so much higher because of how big that field is. Even with the high K rate, he did drop to 25% last year. I believe we're probably at about a 260 batting average with, you know, 30 steals, 20 homers. And there's probably another level there for him. So I really do like him. I haven't gotten enough of him in draft season. I got to figure out why. I think it's more I'm drafting a pitcher right there. But his profile is very attractive. His barrel rate, every metric is rising. And that's what you want to see for a young player.
Yeah. And then speaking of guys in this range is, you know, you got the solid floor, always the floor guy, Brian Reynolds, Saya Suzuki is going to be DHing for most of the season. I think a lot of people know that I am a big fan of his, just want to see him stay healthy for a full season. And then Luis Robert Jr. is just, I don't know. I feel like I kind of cashed out or have played him right the last couple years because I was in on him 2 years ago. It all happened. It was the perfect year of health luck and everything. And then I was completely out at the new price last year and everything happened that happened. But, you know, we're allowed to have our fades in the top 100 and Robert Jr. Listen, it might bite me, especially if he gets traded somewhere good and gets like, you know, going again. And I know he stole a lot of bases and I think last season, but more so in the second half of last year. But I don't know. I just feel like the White Sox are going to really suck the vibes out of everything. And he's a guy that does need, you know, a little bit of a, you know, push motivation from everything that I've read or know about him. So, you know, you can only get so far on pure talent when you're not really staying healthy and you're on the worst team of baseball and are losing every day.
He feels like a guy that if he got traded to a big stage where, you know, he was enjoying himself and was in competition and not on the White Sox, his stats might shoot up. Like you said it perfectly with the vibe sucking it out of him in Chicago. Like he needs to be high energy. He needs to be having fun in order to succeed because the guy's uber talented. But he just basically stopped caring last year. it felt like, and I can definitely see that happening again. So, you know, as valuable as it is at his ADP being, you know, around 82, because what you could get out of it, I mean, we're 2 years removed from a 38-20 season. That's pretty valuable. But probably a fade for me too at this point if he stays in Chicago.
And the next tier of guys, and we're starting to get into the low hundreds as far as ADP goes. We talked about Cody Bellinger when Mike Mager subbed in a couple weeks ago. So, but I would like to get your thoughts on him. Anthony Santander, Riley Green, incredibly solid, unfortunately, in Detroit. Mike Trout and Christian Yelich, that really is, I think, one of the most interesting topics, discussions, because those are the guys that, who knows, over the next 3 to 4 weeks, I think Trout has the bigger, the volatility, the shooting up into the top 50 versus falling out of the top 200, depending on spring. Whereas I feel like Yelich will sort of stay, we kind of know his exact situation. And we know he'll probably miss some games. He's got the back thing, had the surgeries, a little bit slower to start. But like, I feel like Yelich isn't going to move as much as Mike Trout potentially.
Yeah, Mike Trout is completely mispriced right now. If he's healthy going into the season, he's going to move up 2-3 rounds. I think a lot of his draft price is built off of DCs being drafted and their non-replacement. Yelich scares the living bejesus out of me coming off a back surgery. That's no joke, but extremely good hitter. It's kind of a boring tier. Riley Green is very interesting and very kind of attractive to put on your team, but he's kind of like the new Brian Reynolds, where he doesn't do a lot, you know, not a lot of steals, not a ton of power, but his stat cast is impressive. Max X velocity 114, barrel rate 13.4, launch angle 12%, hard hit 46%, line drive 22%, contact 75%. So everything's there, but I think the ballpark limits him. I don't know what a 90th percentile season looks at a hit. Is it 35 and 10 with 90 and 90? I don't know what it is. And so as much as I like him, I'm probably taking an infielder in this tier, unless you're really in desperate need of power. And then I'm probably going Santander because you basically can write in 100 RBIs and 35 homers with him. He just is very consistent.
Yeah, those are two guys I'm not landing a lot on as far as Riley Green, Anthony Santander. And it's nothing against them personally. Well, first of all, because I don't know them. But also because, you know, I mean, there are pitchers in that range usually, or other positions that I'm interested in. I usually have a couple of outfielders at this point. I'm not, Riley Green isn't a CBG guy, right? Talking about CBG now. Isn't that like a weed thing? See, I'm so out of loop on that.
Nope. We're in California, Vlad. We should know that a little better, but I do not know.
Something.
CBT, CBD.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. CBG. These guys we're chasing. Like, you need power around here. Anthony Santander, boom, 35 homers you're hoping for, maybe more. I'm looking right now. So, man, you get Riley Green somewhere else, you've got massive upside. I mean, you mentioned it all. And if you click on his Statcast box, you're getting all the 80s and 90s in everything, because the guy is legit and could get better, but he's stuck in this ballpark that does limit his power. So he could hit 30 easily, I feel like, in most places. Here, it's may not happen. And then additionally, if you really look at this offense, it's kind of bad. And the vibes are not great, because Parker Meadows is already banged up. You've got, what's it called? You got, Matt Vierling is banged up. Chase Young is going to make the team most likely as a starter. You know, Colt Keith is great and all, but better in real life than fantasy. He's moving to first base. Kerry Carpenter's he can't platoon. He's going to have to play full time on this team. This is how bad this offense is. Spencer Torkelson, I believe, is going to make this team, and Gleyber Torres is your three hitter. So the more I look at this offense, you know, Javi Baez is going to make the team. McKinstry is going to make the team. I don't like it.
Hey, don't you hate on DC Zach McKinstry? He's valuable.
Yeah, you play him against, yeah, you play him in a three-game series against righties. Yeah, in cores, and he'll probably hit you two bombs and four steals. Yeah, so there we have it. That is that tier, and let me see. We're talking about the Tigers. I just don't love it.
Yeah, me neither. Anybody you like in that tier? Other than Jason Dominguez, why don't you go ahead and share your love there?
I'll save it for the, you know, the
draft.
Gotta save something else. Yeah. Well, he's a poor defender. You know, he's a butcher in the corners. So don't draft Jason Dominguez in if you're in my league. But I like him 2020.
There's an incredible upside there, but it's just an incredible question mark too. So I can understand you putting him up in this tier. It makes sense.
All right, let's wrap this up with this final tier here, guys that are going 9th, 10th round. Some of these guys are drafted earlier than that. This is just where I have them, but it's Ian Happ, leadoff man for the Cubs. Stephen Kwan, leadoff man for the Guardians, a good batting average guy. Dylan Cruz, he's cruising around the base pass these days. I might be bumping up that stolen base rate for him to get the projection up naturally because it just feels right. You got Pete Crow Armstrong, who I feel is slipping a little bit with each new hairstyle. Adolis Garcia changing his approach, getting his power back, wanting to hit 50 bombs. You got him, and you got Randy Arozarena in Seattle, and then Josh Lowe, platoon guy for the Rays. So how you feel about this group? Any standouts?
Adolis Garcia is the biggest standout for me. We're kind of talking Luis Robert, and I think the give a crap for Adolis last year went out pretty early, and you can tell with the amount of runs he scored, only having 68. He probably wasn't 100% healthy, but he was not giving it his all as Texas was not part of the playoff hunt. I think with that lineup being deep and his kind of invigoration, wanting to hit all those homers, I think he could be pretty good value with power and RBIs down here. And I still have a soft spot for Josh Lowe. I looked at Tampa's depth chart. You know, Roster Resource has him platooning. No, they don't have him platooning, but if they did, with who? This is the worst team they've put on the field in a long, long time, and they do not have a right-handed batter to, unless they think Eloy is going to go play the field, which I think we know the story there. Josh Lowe is not great against left-handed, but if he can go get 145 games in the, you know, again, another different field, which we don't know how it's going to play, but I'd imagine pretty favorable for hitters. You're looking at a possible 30-30 guy there.
That's a great point. I hadn't really even thought about the fact that we've just gone with the, Josh Lowe only plays against right-handers, and that's what we're used to. But when you really look at that roster, who's going to make the team? Richie Palacios is a fellow. He can play the outfield, the infield, but he's a left-handed hitter. They were talking about Jose Caballero playing a little bit in the outfield as well. He's kind of a super utility guy. I think he got hit on the ankle or something on Thursday. It sounds like he'll be fine, but I see him taking more time from like Taylor Walls, for example. That's a really good point. Who the heck is going to, why wouldn't Josh Lowe play every day? So I like it. And there's a little up. It's not, you're right. It's not the sexiest lineup that they've had in a while, but you get Yandy going. You got Caminero, obviously, the hype and the upside. You know, Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau, if he's healthy. Maybe Danny Jansen actually can make something of his career as he's about to turn 30 years old in June. Christopher Morel, Jonathan Aranda, everyone's favorite, riser in the 350s. It's an interesting team. This is one of the ones I don't have the strongest opinion on.
And, you know, I don't know if it'd even be a good thing if he plays, 155 games against, and he plays against lefties, because he's got a 61 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. So that might torpedo you more than it helps you. But maybe he plays against just mediocre lefties and he sits against difficult lefties. And then, you know, that could help him out as well.
Yeah, he is, you know, I think consistent playing time, I think it could be a good thing for him. Who he is as a hitter, as far as where his batting average might land, it's going to be somewhere in between what he did in 2023 when he hit 292. That's not who he is. I also don't think he's a 240 hitter that he was last year when he's basically hurt for most of the year and lost some of his power. Obviously, the batting average might kind of, you know, dip towards the lower end if he's hitting against lefties. But you see players all the time make adjustments or have an outlier year against the handedness that they're weak against. So anything can happen. The one thing's for sure is going to run. 25 of 26 stolen bases in 2024, 32 of 35 in only 500 plate appearances in 2023. Yeah, you're right, man. There's a lot to like here.
He won you a lot of money in 2023. I remember that too.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, we might be back on that. I like the not platooning factor. That works. Last note here, any love for Randy Rosarena? Did I push him down too much? A full round past his ADP of 140.
I think this is where he belongs, Vlad. You know, we're not far off from being a third round pick, you know, because he was an easy 2020 guy. You know, he's still going to be batting in the middle of that lineup, probably third. Bad season. Seattle's a tough park to hit in, but the K rate spiked. BABIP was down. So, you know, maybe that's going to help his batting average, but barrel rate's at 8%, hard hit rates, 43%. You know, it's not pretty. Contact rate's lower than it's been. You know, I'm probably not going to have him, but he's probably can write and pin that he's going to go 20-20 and probably 75-75. So there's some value there around pick 140. Even if we don't like him, if you can sustain the batting average, getting all those other four categories does matter.
It does. I remember you, what was a couple weeks ago, I think I was like trying to make a case how Seattle offense is actually not that bad, and then you pointed out that it actually isn't that great, and you were throwing up in your mouth, I think, about it. But you know, the names are good. The park really does matter, and this is the park that even stunted Teoscar Hernandez. It wasn't as bad as I thought. Teoscar did not have as horrible as a season as I thought I remembered, but this lineup, it looks a little troubling to me. Like, outside of, I could see things going very awry again, because outside of Julio Rodriguez, I mean, come on. It's like Luke Rayleigh, Mitch Haniger, JP Crawford, Dylan Moore is a full-time starter. You sign your big signing is Donovan Solano. And obviously you got big dumper Cal Raleigh, and Victor Robles is your leadoff hitter. Like, what can go wrong?
Nothing at all.
That'll do it for today. Any outfielders we've touched on that we may have missed? Yeah, CBG, Pete Crow Armstrong. You think are you in with my 40 stolen bases, or would you take the under?
I probably not the 40 stolen bases, but the 17 homers I'm taking a hard under on.
Fair. All right, that will do it. We will be back next week. We will talk more outfielders, talk starting pitchers, lots of spring training stuff. We'll have some of the team on here. So that'll do it. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.